This is Eric Shiner, an independent curator based in New York, and I'm here at the Pulse Contemporary Art Fair in Miami, Florida, during the very busy Art Basel Miami week of contemporary art, and interviewing artist Jeremy Koss. And I guess to get started, I'd like to know how you first got interested in becoming an artist. Tell me a little bit about yourself and what you brought to the table of the art world.
I'm 30 years old, born in Texas, and living in New York now, making work full-time. But it all started while living in D.C. and coming back and forth to visit friends in New York. And one of them had a Polaroid camera on the wall of his house. And the camera came with me to a bar in the East Village known as the Cock, the old Cock at Avenue A and 13. And I started taking pictures. And it kind of originally started as a way for me to almost have a social buffer in a weird sort of way. I didn't know anyone yet, and it was kind of my way of being able to talk to people, but with a filter. And so the work kind of continued from there, and you know, I realized that I enjoyed it. And flash forward a year and a half, David LaChapelle gave me a really swift kick in the rear one night in a hotel suite with Pamela Anderson celebrating Amanda Lepore's birthday, and he said, you know, these are really good, you should take it seriously. And that's kind of where it's gone from, and kind of the trajectory, so to speak, in a really high level.
It's funny that you said that you used the camera as a filter, because actually I used to work in curatorial at the Andy Warhol Museum, and Andy did actually the very same thing. He would almost hide behind the camera because he was a very shy person. I don't think you're a very shy person generally, but that was his sort of interstitial zone between the public and his own interior self. Do you think that... Was there ever a point that you were able to put the camera down more and enter that world?
I think that at that point, when I first started doing it, I mean, I'd always been taking pictures of friends and whatever, but they were always with, like, cheap little disposable cameras. I mean, I guess that was circa, you know, 96 or so, when I was taking pictures with disposable cameras a lot. But then, when I started coming to New York, my best friends who I was visiting, one was a coat check and bartender, so he was always working, he was always behind the counter, and so he never really was there to introduce me to people. And went that night at the Cock when I first started, it was one of the very first nights of being in New York, and it was my very first time in the Cock, actually. So it was really kind of awkward and really uncomfortable. So in that sense, it's totally true that it was a social buffer and that I was shy. And, you know, I mean, coming from D.C., where I promoted the largest party in the city and knew everyone and felt like I was kind of on top of the world, that I go to this place where I don't know anyone. And everyone is attractive and everyone is cool. And, you know, at this point in the Cock, everybody is kind of amazing. And here, like, I'm just another guy. So, you know, flash forward today, I don't know that it's so much a buffer, but, you know, it's true that looking at the work that I make now, specifically in celebrity context, the camera has acted as a way of a relationship builder beyond just taking pictures. So as a result now, I mean, these people are friends based on the work as much as me.
Well, I think that's really the special quality of your work, that you do get these really candid shots of the celebrities in their natural environments because they trust you and you do develop relationships with them. So in effect, you're anti-paparazzi because you're really getting their soul and you're getting emotions in all of the photographs. How do you think that has developed? Has it been first through the camera, or has it been socially and then the camera comes into the mix?
I think that there's a kind of a unique combination of the two. And I think that in the same moment of introducing yourself, you can snap the photograph. You know, and the thing about a Polaroid is that because it's a unique moment, you get one shot at it. And, you know, it's there's not much time to really develop that before you take it. Fortunately, I see some of these people over and over, and we develop relationships over time. So, you know, it varies, I guess. But.
Well, I think your approach is really great because you always make eye contact and try to get an emotion out of someone. And when you shoot, it's almost like a stealth in, shoot, and out. It's not like you're snapping picture after picture after picture all the time. So you've really developed a way to get that shot and not really having to depend on taking multiple exposures to really get the look you're going for.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost become second nature. I mean, I almost don't even think about it. I don't think. You know, when I'm making work privately, there's a lot more thought and process that goes into it. But when I'm shooting in public moments, and, you know, I really view myself as an artist who makes work in public moments. When I'm making it in those contexts, there's no time to hesitate. I mean, it's like you either have to see it or you don't. And if you miss it, it's over. And, you know, it's interesting, kind of touching on that when I'm making the work, I don't allow myself or anyone else to look at it until the night is over or I'm back in the studio or whatever. And, you know, when I think about that, it really started in the East Village when I would take these photographs. And if I looked at them and I wasn't happy with it, then I try to recreate it in my head or try to re-see it. And it really hindered what I was making. Instead of creating art from life, I was trying to make... I was trying to create it. I'm kind of talking around it, but it wasn't as strong. It was more fabricated than it was true life.
Well, it definitely takes time to fall into that perfect rhythm in terms of getting to the point that you want to aesthetically. And just by the way, if people are listening to the interview, you can actually view a lot of Jeremy's Polaroid pictures on his website, which is roygrage.com. And there are just hundreds and hundreds of photographs posted on the website that you can actually get a feel for the work and for Jeremy's eye. Now, recently, within the past year or so, you've started to really move beyond Polaroid photography exclusively. Your work really finds its roots in Polaroid photography, but it's definitely gone beyond that. You've done everything from designing some jewelry to paintings, silk screens, video work. How do you think you progress beyond Polaroid photography, and what made you do that?
Well, I think, you know, after making a series of work in Thailand and not really realizing that I was making the work, and I, you know, I think that that's what's kind of special about the body of work, the Polaroid work so far, is that I was making it without knowing I was making it. And I didn't really think about it in that context. So there's a lot of real honesty in it. And I think coming back from Thailand, I had this kind of moment of true conceptual birth, so to speak. And looking at what I'm doing and how it relates to people and what the contexts are. And when I did that, I kind of started to think about, well, what else can I do? And what else can I think about and kind of take the work and blow it out across multiple platforms?
Well, that's interesting because you actually went to Thailand for a job to take pictures of an elephant polo match, if I remember correctly, right?
Yep.
And the pictures that Jeremy's talking about right now are actually of Thai transsexuals at a club in Phuket. Is that where it was located? And you really get this intimate, again, behind-the-scenes sort of feel. You get these performers' emotions, even though you had just met them, presumably. And is that when you sort of had this epiphany that you looked at the final product?
Yeah,
and
I mean, you know, it's because so much of the work, the non-celebrity work, was kind of the Lower East Side, kind of nightlife, provocative nightlife. You know, I thought that it would be interesting as a personal project to kind of look at Thai street nightlife and the transsexuals in a context of prostitutes, which is kind of what we think about when you think about a Thai transsexual. Your first reaction is, I think of prostitutes. So, you know, I found this pocket of them that were super glamorous and really beautiful and have almost elevated themselves above and beyond the stereotype. And so within that body of work, sure, there are some that are like street hookers, but the part of the work that I'm really proud of are these kind of really glamorous, gorgeous people. And so I think when I looked at it in hindsight, I realized that, you know, the importance of what that work could mean and what it could do for that part of stereotype and breaking down stereotypes and talking about realities and transcending. So the body of work is really called the Transcension Series. You know, looking at these people who have broken the mold, broken the stereotype, and have elevated themselves to these beautiful people.
Well, thinking of it that way, I think that actually your celebrity photographs do the same thing in a lot of ways, because the general populace has an idea of what celebrities are, how they act, how they behave. And of course, you see photographs in People magazine or Us Weekly and all of these sorts of things. But looking at your Polaroids that are hanging here on the wall of the gallery, because you get them looking at you, and it's also oftentimes in a relaxed moment, you really are sort of breaking the stereotype that these are real people, that they have souls, they have emotions, and it's not just the facade of celebrity in Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's really important that we do that. And it's really important that the work does that to me. I mean, I think it can tell a really, really interesting, unique story. You know, and I think part of what I love about all the work and the celebrity work, the rest of it, is kind of the disjointed narratives that go with it. I don't like telling the full story. I want you to kind of think about, well, where was it? What was the context? Who did they interact with before?
Well, that definitely plays out as well in your more recent video works where, for example, the work that you had the actress Mina Suvari perform, and she actually sitting in a car in the Hollywood Hills, and you're filming from behind in the back seat, and she's applying her makeup in the rearview mirror, and it's just this sort of intimate look as though you're a voyeur hiding in the back seat of the car, and you can tell it's her because of her eyes, and obviously that's not something that anyone else would have access to.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are two videos that recently that I kind of created in private context that draw both bodies of Polaroid work a little bit step further, and you know, they're both shot with a personal camera versus super high definition, kind of staying in tune with that intimate kind of raw texture. The Mina Suvari piece is the obvious parallel with celebrity, and you know, kind of looking at deconstructing celebrity a little bit. And then the other piece that we're showing here too, the video of Rainblow, he's a downtown New York character. So, you know, kind of taking both of them and continuing into new work, but kind of still addressing the same things that the Polaroid work is addressing.
Well, it's really, you know, in my opinion, an extension of the Polaroids, because it is portraiture. You're still filming someone doing something, whereas the Polaroids are quick snap, but the video actually just pulls that out and makes it more intimate.
What I like about both videos is that, you know, though Mina Suvari's piece is shot from behind, both the Mina Suvari piece and the Rainblow piece intimate somewhat of like the Warhol screen test looks. You know, and if you think about what Mina did from behind, if the camera was in front, it could really easily be one of Andy's works. So, you know, I think that, and you know, I should say that wasn't an intention going in, but it's certainly a byproduct looking at it on the back end. So.
Well, certainly, again, Andy Warhol has really played into all of your work. Do you think that you went into it knowing about Andy Warhol, or has it been something that you've sort of gone back to and realized that there are a lot of connections?
You know, his Polaroids inspired me, but only after I started taking them.
So it's not like you wanted to emulate
Warhol. I started doing it to do it, and then realized that afterwards there was this massive body of work. And to be perfectly honest, my art history knowledge at that point was completely non-existent. So it's only been in the last year and a half, 2 years, that I've really spent time learning and educating myself and spending time and looking back at what other people have done before to kind of pay respect with my work going forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely Warhol, a lot of art historians have called Warhol the mirror of his times, because he was out always and he was recording what was going on around him, and his work thus provides a really close and intimate look at the social scene of the 60s, 70s, 80s, etc. So I think in that way, you're also mirroring the world that you live in by capturing these people and really showing what New York nightlife is like and what celebrity culture might be like, both out in public but also behind closed doors. So I think that that's where the real overlap is.
Yeah, happening. I mean, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I think, you know, a new series that I'm working on subconsciously is looking at artists as celebrity. And a lot of them are my friends, with whether it's Terrence Coe or Banks Violet or whoever. But I'm kind of working on this series of photographs now, looking at artists as celebrity. And, you know, it's interesting, by us hanging them together, we almost effectively make them a celebrity more so than the art world has started to create them as. And you look at Matthew Barney, and you look at Terrence, and you look at Francesco Clemente, and they really almost are celebrities in popular culture, but by contextualizing them amongst Victoria Beckham or Courtney Love, you take it one step further.
Well, absolutely, because of course here in Miami or within the art world, wherever that happens to be, they are superstars, and everyone knows who they are and knows who they look like. However, in mainstream society, off in the hinterlands or abroad, people would have no idea who they are if they were walking down the street. So you are, in ways, elevating them to the level of mass culture by placing them next to Pamela Anderson or whomever else, for that matter.
No, for sure.
Now, another thing that I want to think about in terms of Warhol, not to beat a dead horse, but
sure,
Warhol certainly did a lot of self-portraiture, oftentimes in drag, and you recently completed a new video that actually builds on that idea. Do you want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, it's called What You Need Is in the Limo, kind of directly pulling from a line from David Bowie and his, you know, the kind of iconic song Fame. And the work looks at a lot of different things. Its roots are in kind of the ridiculousness of celebrity culture in a weird way. And in the piece, I did really bad drag, no makeup, just black lipstick, a really bad blonde wig, a huge hat, kind of intimating like a Lindsay Lohan kind of character. And we walked down Fifth Avenue at 1:30 in the afternoon. And when I say we, it was myself and 2 6-foot-9, 480-pound bodyguards, who are real bodyguards. So we walked down the street, periodically going into stores, and it was about a 25-minute walk, 20-minute walk, kind of creating a scene and looking at how we as a society react to those kind of things and what that means.
So basically, people saw you in this very strange outfit, as though you were a celebrity, perhaps trying to hide or camouflage yourself, not only with sunglasses or the hat or the wig, but the mob mentality sort of took over, and several people actually started to follow you down the street.
Yeah, it's really bizarre.
Having no idea who you were or what you were, but thinking and hoping that you were somebody big. It's almost like a safari where you're going out to look at big cats, and you're walking down Fifth Avenue in New York, and Lindsay Lohan or Michael Jackson jumps out of an SUV, and boom, you've spotted a celebrity.
Yeah,
and I mean, you actually had the cameramen capture those people as they were following you and the reactions that they had and the things they were saying.
Yeah. And I'm really happy with the way the work turned out. It really is a comment on society as much as how ridiculous it is for these celebrities to draw attention to themselves with these enormous guys. I mean, if I'd have been by myself, I don't think it would have been as ridiculous. I mean,
well, you probably would have been viewed as a crazy person.
Yeah, in New York, they would have just looked at me like, oh, there's another, it's New York, of course.
Yep.
But with these two enormous guys, it completely changes the equation. And, you know, looking at it while in character doing the piece, I didn't feel it as much. Which is why, you know, there were three cameras, one from in front, one from behind, and one film attempting to solely film reactions. And the camera in front is really meant to look at what the state of mind of this person is. And the other cameras were really to kind of tell the story of what the reality is. And so, you know, it's interesting looking back at it. I didn't realize that it was so crazy. I didn't realize I had people following me. I mean, I knew when we exited stores that there were mobs waiting outside. You know, 50 people at Cavalli. It was really bizarre, but, you know, I didn't see it.
No, absolutely. And I think in a lot of ways you've actually gone back again to the Polaroid thing because you've actually inserted yourself into the position of your subjects. So you've inserted yourself into that celebrity world and the way that they must encounter life every day, that any time they enter the public mix, they're immediately photographed, they're immediately followed. So in ways, you've just gone right back and completed the circle and putting yourself there in their shoes.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, to be perfectly honest, it wasn't so bad. I mean, to have these two enormous guys and an SUV waiting, and I mean, it's kind of like, it's, you know, I can understand why they would do it. I mean, I get it, but it doesn't mean it's not ridiculous.
So at the end of the walk, what did you actually stop in front of, and how does the video end?
There are two versions of the video. And in the single channel version, you finally see my face. You don't see my face the entire work until the very end. And so, you know, kind of leaving the mind to wonder, what is this character? Is it really somebody? Is it somebody being followed? I mean, is it me as the camera person? And then I stare into the face of the Jeff Koons Blue Diamond work as it's sitting in front of Christie's preparing to be sold that night. So, you know, it's an additional comment about artists as celebrity and staring itself in the face. And so in that version, it ends that way and simply fades out. And you hear someone asking who the character was, and you hear a bystander say, oh, it's Michael Jackson. Which is kind of great. I couldn't ask for much more to kind of have that perception. It's pretty cool.
Oh, and it was completely natural. It wasn't something that you staged. It was
That was such an amazing
reaction.
Like surprise when I watched the footage. It was like, oh my God, what?
Who was that?
Wow, like
Michael Jackson.
Incredible.
It's really, really amazing. So, what's next?
The new silk screen work, or the new screen print work. Taking 15 of the celebrity Polaroids, enlarging them, removing the eyes with a really subtle Douglas Gordon reference, but at the same time, you know, an additional comment about who we are as a society and how we look at celebrity. And, you know, I felt like, I kind of remember seeing Britney Spears constantly, and I felt like I was seeing Britney more than I saw my mom, and I felt all of a sudden like I knew her. And I thought that if I felt that way and my relationship to celebrity as a whole, how must middle America react when they see these people constantly? And I, you know, if you think about it, it equates to stalkers, it equates to all these different kind of things. But so the work, the images are enlarged, the eyes are removed, inverted, and printed on gold canvas. The gold canvas is the same color as the Warhol piss paintings, and it's intentional. But, you know, it's looking at how we relate to celebrity and saying that if we perceive like we know everything about them, then what's really left?
So they really become like an empty shell,
right?
Because they're in negative.
It's not about the individual.
Right.
It's really not an attack on the individual, but it's more a comment on society. And
well, they become faceless because we're sitting in front of a Lindsay Lohan portrait, and there's really no way you can tell that it's
a
shell.
I mean, a celebrity publicist didn't know who it was. So, you know, the works are untitled, and the name of the celebrity is in captions.
And you can still see the paparazzi in the background.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Victoria Beckham one I really love, when you kind of see Larry Clark's New York Yankee hat and the logo of the Yankee hat kind of float in the background. I love how the surroundings become almost ghostly as well.
And the equipment, the camera equipment, actually is what stands out the most in some of the things. A microphone here, a camera box there.
Yeah, the images were really carefully selected.
Mm. It shows. Okay, well, I think that will do it for the interview. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.